Both Bixby Land Company and Alameda's Land Company are still active companies. I'll take Alameda's first because I can go through that rather quickly. Of course, Alameda's Land Company had the Alameda's number one well, which was the Discovery well, and of course that changed the city of Long Beach, completely turned it around. The Alameda's number one well is still, Alameda's Land Company still owns the property where it is, and about 100 acres up on the hill there, and we have kept Alameda's number one operating all this time. It's now a historical monument, and
yes,
the well is still there going up and down, and it's not a very economic operation for us, or for Richfield, who's operating that east unit now, but it's still there. Am I coming through?
No, yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Alameda's Land Company has a major ranch down the Imperial Valley near Brawley, which was actually acquired, as I mentioned before, in a series of trades from the Bluff property. No, wait a minute. No, that wasn't. That was the funds that went into that ranch down there. Right after the start of the war, the Alameda's Land Company owned 322 acres back of Sunset Beach, which is now the naval weapons station. During the war, it was called the Net Depot, and right after the start of World War II, they came in and condemned that land from the Alameda's Land Company. We fought them for 5 years on it and finally made a settlement in about 48 or 49, and we took those funds and invested them in other real estate and eventually traded that and ended up with about 2,000 acres near Brawley, California, which we have farmed ever since about 1953, which is an interesting thing because it's in a geothermal hot spot down there and is under lease to the Union Oil Company, who have a geothermal development very close to it. And from what we understand, probably they will start working on our ranch down there for geothermal, which is just a little bright spot in the future. The Alameda's Land Company always seems to be lucky with things like that. They also still own a Spring and Palo Verde, the northeast corner, with a development in there. And we are starting to develop some of the 100 acres, more or less, that we have on the northeast section of northeast part of Signal Hill, with about 50,000 square feet of office complex. Now, some of the lands up there that have come out from under the former shell lease, and we are working on a master plan of development, which keeps us pretty busy, and we do have under construction now the first of what we anticipate will be the developing and continuing development as we get the rest of the oil field back of that. And that's Alameda's is an active company, and we still have some production as a result of our joining in with the Signal Hill East unit, which is, as I say, operated by ARCO. That's a quick thumbnail on that. The Bixby Land Company is fortunately well and thriving. Now, we deal in commercial and industrial properties, which our own, which we build and develop and hold on to. We aren't in the business of manufacturing and selling. We've developed, as I say, the Circle Center out there with a Thrifty, Vons, Builders Emporium, Security Bank complex around near the Circle, and we're just completing an addition to that between Los Coyotes Diagonal and Lakewood Boulevard with a Ralph's Market and a complex in there.
I've seen that.
And
yeah.
We have odd properties all around that end of town that we've saved out corners and whatnot to develop that keep us pretty busy. We go around 600,000 or 700,000 square feet of industrial and commercial properties in this area, and some of them up towards the Los Angeles area that we manage through the office down there. So that keeps us pretty busy doing. And as you know, daughter Jean is in the office and has been there for about 4 or 5 years, and she seems to be very happy. And of course, we're very happy to have her there on hand. One of these days, I'm going to run out. I'm getting a little too old to be hanging around there. They're going to kick me out. particularly if I keep falling off a roof. Going on down through your list, or you say, what is the impact of the discovery on oil? And I think that's pretty well documented, but the south slope of Signal Hill was becoming the residential place in the late 1918, 1920, 1921, a lot of them, big homes were built on there, and so when oil was discovered, and of course, with the town lot drilling, that killed that operation. Quite a number of the houses that were built there were moved out to Los Cerritos, and about the time they got out to Los Cerritos, by the oil went through there. And so the oil really changed the face of Long Beach along the way. For, I don't know, for better or for worse, but in any event, it did. One other interesting thing that I don't think too many people know about, on this map you'll see lands of the Alamitos Water Company.
Yes.
That's Recreation Park.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in about 1921 or 22, the Virginia Country Club leased this from the Alamitos Land Company, and that was the original Virginia Country Club. Mm-hmm. We had a little shack out there, a little clubhouse, right about where the existing clubhouse is, and the greens were just oil greens, and no water on it at all. Mm. We mowed the weeds down in the spring, and then it was just like concrete all the rest of the year until the fall when the weeds started coming up again, and you could hit a golf ball 300 or 50 or 400 yards out there just very easily. But it was... The Alamitos Water Company was a creature of the Alamitos Land Company, which was put together to provide water for all this end of town.
Mm-hmm.
There was no water in it, mm-hmm. and this is Reservoir Hill
mm-hmm.
up here, and the property that the Alamitos still owns, this area right in here. The original water wells we had in here, we pumped them up there to tanks where the reservoir is now. The big reservoirs are mm-hmm. now, and that was a distribution system
oh.
all through this end of town out here, the Alamitos Water Company. As I say, a child of the Alamitos Land Company. When this was incorporated and added into the city of Long Beach, we sold the company, or turned it over to the city water department, and then Alamitos Land Company got this back because the city developed some wells out in here, a lot of it on Bixby Land Company that were much better than this down here. This was too close to the ocean. We had some saltwater intrusion there. The other ones out in here in Bixby Land Company East, we sold city water. So I think it was in 1923, the city, I think Charlie Henderson was city manager, and Fred Bixby and Charlie thought that ought to be a city park.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a handshake, nothing written on, that they would sell it, the Alamitos, to the city for X dollars if the citizens wanted them. They had a bond issue. I think it was about $900,000. And it has, I think, a record. It passed 16-1. So the city bought that from the Alamitos Land Company. It was a hell of a bargain. Fred made a bad deal for the company and a good deal for the city, just on a handshake, which is the way they did business in those days, because Belmont Heights and all in here had come on and was quite well developed. This is re-subdivided all in here. So that was a pretty valuable piece. I think it was 275 acres in there that we sold for roughly about $3,000 an acre, which was way below the going price for everything else in the neighborhood. So that was the Alamitos, the Virginia Country Club had made a deal with the Jotham Bixby Company out in Los Cerritos. They had an option, if the bond issue passed, to buy 150 acres between Long Beach Boulevard, Virginia Road, and the UP tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So when the bond issue passed, why the Alamitos Land, I mean the Virginia Country Club, exercised that option. And that's why the Virginia Country Club moved out there by the old adobe. So that was the motive, the reason that they moved out there.
Uh-huh.
They were pushed out there.
That was when you you helped your father.
Yeah, that was a rod man. He actually went out and did the original survey on the Virginia Country Club and the layout, and I was a rod man for him then. Los Angeles Dock and Terminal Company, which later on became the Long Beach Dock and Terminal Company, started about 1905 or 6. and they developed the Long Beach Harbor, Inner Harbor. That's pretty well documented in this book. The L.A. River used to dump into channel number 3 there, and so it would silt up faster than anybody could take care of it. Ultimately, the Long Beach Dock and Terminal Company deeded all the channel bottoms to the city of Long Beach, and that was when the channel was, for the river, was channelized down and go down at President's Court and didn't empty any more into channel number 3 into the harbor, and that then made the harbor a feasible thing. But the Dock and Terminal Company did develop it. They sold the property for the Craig Shipyards, and Long Beach's warehouse number 1 was on that channel, and they sold to Richfield and various other things. The Long Beach Dock and Terminal Company was really the brainchild of a fellow by the name of C.J. Curtis.
Yes.
Real good friend of all our her folks and my folks. They lived at Ocean and what, one block east?
Loma.
And the house...
Paloma? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that house is still there. That was a C.J. Curtis. They moved to Rancho Santa Fe, and at the time they did that, C.J. Curtis, for some reason or other, decided that I ought to run the Long Beach Dock and Terminal Company, so that was another one that I inherited. He just called me up one day and said they were moving to that, and you come down and take over with John. John McCarthy was the attorney for the... That still owns some properties down in the harbor, quite a bit of oil interest. So we obtained some of the mineral rights under the Turning Basin.
Yes.
In there, and properties on Oregon and south of Anaheim, which we developed into some warehouses. And in 1964 or 1965, the Dock and Terminal Company merged with Reserve Oil and Gas Company, and they took over the operations of that, and the Los Angeles Dock and Terminal Company, and they had to go through a reorganization because when the problems of filling up the channel, the company that came out of Los Angeles Dock and Terminal was Long Beach Dock and Terminal Company, and that's...
I saw your father was listed as the vice president of Los Angeles Dock and Terminal.
That's right. Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. And he was George H. Bixby was also involved in that, and quite a number of other people around town. It was a local conceived idea of taking that swampland down there, and they fought a running battle with the Salt Lake Railroad because they had a trestle across the entrance down there, and because of the through the Army engineers who they were forced to put in the lift bridge across there. It went from the Long Beach to Terminal Island where the Edison Company is over there. But that was a running battle, and they had to get that in there so that they could open up that navigable waterway, and they were blocking a navigable waterway, and they had to go to Washington. Mm-hmm. That was a battle that I've only heard of. Mm-hmm. It was all fought before I came on the scene, but... Mm-hmm. C.J. Curtis was a great friend of mine and the family's, and he decided in the middle 40s that he wanted to retire, and so I took that over. It was a rather nice, pleasant job. We did some work on that. And John McCarthy, who became a judge, John McCarthy, pretty well known around the town, was the attorney, and he was the secretary of that. Incidentally, you interviewed Daring Neighbors here some time ago, and Daring Neighbors, the Amelia Bixby Company, because of George Bixby's interest, had a pretty big stock in the Dock and Terminal Company, and Daring Neighbors used to sit on our board representing the Amelia Bixby Company in the later years and down through the operating years and up until we merged with Reserve Oil and Gas, which then, not too long ago, about 5 years ago, merged with Getty. And now Getty's merging with
Texaco.
Anyway, that's that. The Saltwater Laundry Company was a sort of a family enterprise. The individual, my dad, and the Cook brothers were in that. We ran that until up in the late 50s. And water became too expensive and the machinery was too old, and so we closed that and sold it to a uniform commercial I guess it's still running down there.
Was it the first laundry in Long Beach, or one of the first?
I think it was the first family, big family laundry in Long Beach. And Will and J.B. Cook, that I mentioned before, were with invested in that with my dad and some of the others, a fellow by the name of Workman.
Mm-hmm.
The Long Beach Dairy and Creamery Company is a child of the Bixby Land Company.
Mm-hmm.
When they had this 4,500 acres out here, it was dry farming mostly, and the only way that they could get anything out of it was to grow grass or feed cows, and we had five dairies at one time, running stretched all the way from Signal Hill, about where the hospital in there near Redondo and Willow was the closest one, and clear over to one just north of the sugar factory in Los Alamitos. And the thing, we ran those, and then we had all the milk, so we had to do something with it, and they formed the Long Beach Dairy and Creamery Company and built a building where the Sears Roebuck building is now, and went in the distribution of milk and creamery and ice cream and ice and whatnot all through about the beginning with horse-drawn buggies, and later on with a fleet of trucks, but that was shot down by a thing called the hoof and mouth disease, which came through Southern California in about the late 1920s.
Mm.
And Uncle Sam came through and shot all our cattle, dug some trenches and bulldozed the carcasses in there, never paid us a cent for them. And that just put us completely out of the dairy business, with the exception of one dairy, which we kept, the one over by Los Alamitos. And we had prize stock of Holsteins and Guernseys and whatnot that had been built up laboriously, mostly by George H. Bixby. That was sort of his baby for years and years, and just within a week or two or three, it was completely wiped out. That meant we had to close the dairy and creamery company down there, so we went in and bulldozed that out and built the Sears Roebuck building. And that was a great accomplishment as far as the city was concerned until 1933, when the earthquake came along and it shook the Sears Roebuck building down so badly. We were required under the terms of the lease to rebuild it, which we did, and we sold it then to Sears Roebuck because we borrowed more money than we could afford on it. So we sold it to Sears Roebuck for just the same amount of money that we had borrowed. They just took over the loan on that. So wiped it. That, along with the depression and taxes and the ranch being shut down, the company was on real hard times by the end of the 40 or the 30s in there. And when I turned up, we had a big tax load and had to dig it out from under that. Those years were pretty rough. The sugar factory at Los Alamitos was another child of the Bixby Land Company. It was given to the Clark interest on that, to put that sugar factory in early around 1898 or something like that, to put in there so that they could entice Belgian and Dutch farmers to come over and grow sugar beets.
Oh.
And during World War I, we had about 5,000 acres of beets during World War I, and that was what started the town. We subdivided the town of Los Alamitos.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that the one dairy subsided came through out there is they used to have a little rail line, and the sugar beet tops that they took could put in little cars, and a hand car across what's now Cerritos Avenue, extension of Spring Street, across there to our dairy just on the north side of the street, and we'd roll those cars into the cow barns and feed the cows beet tops. That was where we got our principal source of feed for that dairy over there. And that lasted up until it was about 1948 or 49 when we finally closed that down because the equipment was old and the milk business was a little lousy, and we had a manager by the name of William McComey who had been an old retainer of the family, and he was getting blind, and so one day we just closed the door and ran all the cows up to a auction yard up near Puente.
Mm-hmm.
auctioned the whole thing off and sold them off and then ran a bulldozer when Bill McComey died. Well, he didn't die. We let him stay in that house, live his life out there for another 5 or 6 years. So I'm getting down to the tail end. Virginia Country Club, the ownership of warehouses in Los Angeles, that was all Jotham Bixby Company, Bixby Land. The sugar factory, as I say, was built out there on land given to it by the Bixby Land Company to provide an outlet for all the beet farmers that they wanted to put in. If you want to come by the office sometime, I'll show you the old track map and the flyer that we put out and sent over to Europe to attract a lot of our farmers. We were dry farming that, and when I came on stream, we were still farming all that. Most of the dry farming, we had Belgians, and of course we had some Japanese. And when the Japanese were our very best farmers, and when the war hit, and they just rounded them up and turned the whole thing, it left me with a bunch of land that wasn't leased and Jap farmers with equipment and all. A lot of them were good friends of ours and had been tenants for years. I'm pretty sorry for some of those guys. We helped find other tenants, but of course the other tenants took advantage of them because they bought their equipment and everything else to operate at an unconscionable price. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I could do or we could do except try and find somebody to move in and operate for them. Mm-hmm. Bank of Long Beach, well, that was where the security bank is down there. That's another long story.
We know something about that because we have papers from Security Bank that go back to the founding of the bank. And P.E. Hatch's papers, and he saved every receipt he ever got, I think.
Good, yeah.
So he must have been a fascinating man.
He was, and Ellsworth Hatch, his son, moved in behind him, and he was down there when they first built the building, but they took him up to Los Angeles, and he was very active in the management of the security bank up there. Unfortunately, he had a brain tumor and died quite young. His real nice guy. He was on the board of directors of the Bixby Land Company for a number of years. He was still on there, when I took over. He stayed on for a little while, and then he put somebody else. Mrs. Amelia was on the board. Young Jotham was on the board, and myself was on it. And then Max and Smith, who's still on the board, came in about 1944. Actually, he came in 1944, January of 44, because Terry's working on a plaque, not a plaque, but a resolution that we're having illuminated for his 50th year, 40th year, which we're going to give to him at a board meeting next week.
Oh,
actually, it's interesting, just sort of a closing thing on Bixby Land Company. 6 out of 7 directors are all direct descendants of the Llewellyn Bixby. Oh. The only non-descendant is Matthew Simpson, Matt Simpson of the old Denial Hart Simpson firm, and we did use them for a good many years. Matt Simpson is still a member of our board, but all the rest of them, myself, daughter Jean, David Bixby, who's the son of Amelia, Max and Smith, Jordan Smith, he is a son of Llewellyn Bixby Smith, who was Maxon's brother, myself, who else? Oh, Willie Chamberlain, yeah. The Chamberlain is on that board. So those are 6 of them. Actually, the Bixby Land Company is, the ownership of the stock is still 99%, I would say, in the hands of direct lineal descendants, except where it's passed on by inheritance, but a relationship and is closely held, and everybody sort of hangs together. It's very, we're doing quite well in our enterprises now. That's about it, and it's sort of time for me to go back down and report in to daughter Jean.